Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
VP Fuels pit report. As into the pit lane comes Dane Cameron in the number six Acura Team Penske. The team is going to do fuel and tires and assess the damage, taking the nose off the car. They want to get a look at the front suspension. I would imagine there is no secondary nose. Yep, it's still on the far side of the wall, though, so they are going to evaluate quickly before they put the new nose onto Dane's car. It doesn't look as if they're too worried about anything, though. These cars are built fairly robustly, so it shouldn't be that big of an issue for Dane, you would hope. They have put the new front tire on the left-hand side, working on the right side now, not losing as much time because, of course, under caution, you're going to bunch back up to the field anyway. So Penske, with their organization, taking the opportunity to check the car over, and Dane now exits the pit lane once again. This car is last in the DPI championship, though, in terms of the full season runners and riders that we're used to seeing. So they're not concerned about going for championship points anymore. They're looking for race wins. And it was looking like a good day for the six before that incident happened.
55 Mazda also in the pit lane there as well. That car lost time earlier on with front brake change required when Harry Tinknell lost a front rotor, we believe. I haven't had that confirmed yet, actually, but certainly that's what it looked like. Jeremy Shaw, you know, that's typically Penske. Let's not take any chances. We'll have a look over the car. And clearly, Dane Cameron must have been reporting something back. Yeah, they've lost a bit of real estate, but we've got half the race to go.
True. He'll be pretty fortunate. I think the caution period came out because he was able to get in there, check it out. And if it's okay, he should be absolutely fine. Tristan Vautier also came in car number five. I think on the last pit stop for number five car. Now wait a minute, that was the previous caution period, wasn't it? So yeah. I was going to say, the number five might have taken a short fill last time, just to make sure he got back on the lead lap. But with that caution period, he's back on schedule now with everybody else. So curious to know why the number five car came in LMP2. Interestingly, the number 52 car, which still leads, did not come into the pits again, but the number 8 car did. And the number 8 car is now back on the lead lap. Because the 52 car didn't come in on the last round of pit stops, when it did make a stop, it lost a lot of ground. That enabled the number 8 to get back onto the lead lap, as we see all the GT cars onto the pit lane.
Johnny has been doing a little bit of detective work about the third car. We'll come to that in a moment as the pits are open for GT. And Shea Adam will give us this VP Racing Fuel Pit Report.
Jesse Krohn, is he getting back into the 24 BMW, or is he doing a drinks bottle change? No, drinks bottle change. So tricky by the 24 BMW, watching that pit stop to try and make sure that the right rear goes on smoothly this time. It is a driver change for the number 4 Corvette. Oliver Gavin, after a single, is handing back over to, it looked like Tommy Milner's helmet to me, so I'm going to write down TM on my little notepad. Also into the pit lane, both of the Porsches, the 912 was Matthew Jaminet, who brought the car in. That should be fuel and tires for that car, as he's only done a single stint in it. And in the 911, Matty Campbell might be getting out, actually, because he's done a double, so it might be time for Nick Tandy once again. Jaminet does stay in the 912. And as for the 911 Porsche, well, that's still a little bit further back from triggering the sensors. So I can tell you that into the 12, Aimvaster Sullivan Lexus, the Townsend Bell brought in from the lead, it is now Frank Montecalvo. Still Shinny Machini in the 86 MSR Acura. Trent Hinman once again in the 57. Boy, when you can hand over from Alvaro Parent to Trent Hinman, that's not a bad day. And from Patrick Long to Jan Halen in the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche. So that's also a very good stop there.
Johnny, what have you been able to find out about the elusive, not the third man here, but the third car?
Well, with thanks to Nelson Valkenburg, who actually manages Jot van Aertert and Austin McCusker, two drivers in the motor race. He was interrogating Jot's times, actually, and sending me a little bit of information about his laps prior to a race stop. But he reckons 80%, Nelson says, that was actually Jot van Aertert on the grass, because his middle sector time for that particular lap was 30 seconds slower than it should have been. So I reckon LMP2 car on the grass, Jot van Aertert being the number 8 car for Tower Motorsport by Starworks, just been taken over by John Ferrano. Again, might have been entirely unrelated. You know, Jop having his own moment, maybe a drama with the car, quite possibly, and he was doing a reset with it. So that was on the grass. Dane Cameron was to driver's left, also on the grass, and that little cut-through road at the S's. Meanwhile, behind it, you've got a side-by-side contact with the Mazda coming back onto the racetrack from the pits and the 66 Ferrari that was already on track.
I'm pretty certain, given the way they looked at the front of that Acura, that there was some kind of contact
yeah, maybe
between Cameron and, if it was indeed, Jop van Aute.
That's the bit Chip. We didn't see.
Yeah, indeed. Chip?
Just got one quick update for you. Looking at the rest of the GTD pit stop that happened, the 48 Paul Miller racing car did come in just for a splash more fuel during that stop, so it actually left in the lead of the GTD class. But John Potter is now listed against the 44 Magnus GRT Lamborghini. He only needs to do 1 minute and 55 seconds by my count, 58 seconds by the team count. So he will get that on this outlap. He can come back in the next time around because the pits will be open for everybody, and then they can put back in either Andy Lally or Spencer Pompelli to the end of the race with all of their drivers having met the minimum time by the time the checkered flag comes out.
Yeah, and that means he would lose some real estate, but having done all of that under yellow flag, is that what you're suggesting, or do you think John will do a stint or half a stint?
No, I think he's going to do this lap and then get back out of the car. And yes, they will lose some real estate, but it's better than being disqualified at the end of the race because one driver was a minute short on drive time.
Yeah, absolutely right. And a smart thing to do if they knew it was going to be a yellow flag long enough. Into the second half of the race. Looks like we're getting ready to go back to green again. 98.1 is Road Atlanta FM at the circuit, Sirius 217, XM202. No interruptions. And around the world on RS2, IMSA Radio. Also, if you're outside the US, if you're in the US, the NBCSN sports team, commentary team, will be back with you on the network later on. And if you're outside the US, we've got live uninterrupted video for you on IMSA.tv and, of course, at radio-show.co.uk. Now, looked like we were going for a start there, and then not. Definitely saw Ricky Taylor drop back, Jeremy, from the BMW. I thought the BMW safety car had pulled away there, but the lights must have still been on the safety car. Very odd indeed. Now, in fairness, race control channel does not see it. Anything, the last message from them was commence class split 3 minutes ago. Okay, as you were. Right, Jeremy, half the race to go. What's your gut feeling on this? What's the old instinct telling you?
We've got a fantastic motor race coming up.
Excellent.
The number 44 car, by the way, as Shay said, has come back into the pit lane. So John Potter will, I think, hop out of that car and leave the remainder of the race to the pros in the GRT Magnus Lamborghini.
Yes.
The number 14 car, by the way, was kind of off strategy a little bit, but Jack Hawksworth has got the pass around because when the other cars in GTD came into the pits, he was then back on the lead lap, got the pass around, came around the back of the pack, has now made his pit stop, and because we haven't gone back to green this lap like most of us were expecting, that car will now be able to run around and completely rejoin the back of the pack. So this slight delay is great news for that number 14 AIM Vassar Sullivan Lexus.
Right, very good.
Jeremy, I think that car pitted twice under this caution.
Which one was that?
The 14 Lexus. I could be wrong, but I saw a P next to that name, then an O with Jack Hawksworth listed against the car once again, made a note of that, then saw P next to it again, and now I'm seeing another O.
The 14?
Yes, yeah. Correct.
Okay.
I'm confused.
Well, Hawksworth brought it in after an 11-lap stint. And I think he stayed in the car, hasn't he? Yes, he has.
Yeah, because the car was in on 197, which was... because I think it had made a splash on the previous stop to get back on sequence. It had been a lap down. This is going back to the previous caution period. And I think then it was kind of running out of fuel. So they had to pit under green, as did the 48 car during that previous sequence before we went back to yellow again. And I think as a result of making that pit stop, the 48 car fell back off the lead lap again.
Yes, agreed.
So it's now kind of made that back up again.
Yeah, because they did, albeit with the help of some safety car, they did 46 laps in the previous full stint. And then, as you rightly said, Jeremy, an 11-lap stint then, which was only three laps of green before the this caution came out. But Shea is right. That has been into the pits twice.
During the sequence. Curious.
Yes.
Well spotted. I'll
send a text.
Already on it, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. Good spot, Shea. So, Johnny Palmer, Jeremy Shaw, Shea Adam, John Heindorf. That's your team through to the end of the race. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch, tell us where you're watching and what your thoughts are about what you've seen so far. The sun continues to drop in to the west of the circuit, which means turn 1 and 2, turn 5, and then the really bad one is turn 7, where the glare is going to be the worst on the windscreen and in the driver's eyes. And of course, that will be exaggerated, Jeremy, by any dirt on the windscreen. And, you know, we've not long had a very long green flag run, and they'll be wanting to save as many of the tear-offs on the screen to when we get to the darkness time.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point, because when the sun does set here, if it's a sunny day like it is now, it's really tricky. You talked about it a while ago. When you head around turn 6 and into 7, the sun is directly on the treetops, which are kind of down a little bit from the edge of the racetrack. So they are absolutely square in your eyes as you break for turn 7. So you do want the windshield to be in as good a possible shape as it can be for particularly that dusk part of the race.
Just had this from Team Penske on their official feed. And thanks to Eve, the responsible adult, as we're going back to green. The number 6 involved in a multi-car incident during a pit cycle, resulting in minor damage to the front wing, and drops Dean Cameron to 5th after an extra trip to pit road. Back to green then. And the number 7, Ricky Taylor, leads. So it has been a bit of an up and down day for the two Acuras. Clean restart from all of the prototypes, which were cycled through to the front. However, there is going to be a penalty for Colin Brown and Performance Tech Motorsport. Shea Adam has this and news of that extra pit stop for the number 14 in Vassar Sullivan Lexus. Shea?
Wheel rotation while on the jack stands means that the 38 Performance Tech of Colin Brown will be coming back down the pit lane. That is an unforgivable penalty in the terms of race control, because it endangers your crew. As for the 14 Lexus, it came down the pit lane, did full service, and then it came down again to top off on fuel. So it was nothing detrimental, which is good news for fans out there of the yellow and black cars.
Thank you, Shea, for that VP Racing Fuel pit report. So back to racing then. And now, slow prototype, I think, coming down into 10A, which I think was the Euro Interpol car, being passed by a couple of GT cars, maybe just getting back up to speed. We'll keep an eye on that number 51 car. It's Rob Hodes behind the wheel, and may just have been staying out the way of the battling GT LMs, which were in close quarters there. Good restart, Jeremy, by Ricky Taylor. Certainly nothing wrong with the Acuras when they're going off these starts and restarts. They've always been able to break away a little bit.
Yeah, they have, and it was a real turnaround in fortunes, like you were saying, for the Acura team, because the number 7 car is just in the lead for the first time in this race. That's the 18th lead change. Took the lead on that for 228 during when the number 77 car was involved in the shunt. So that becomes our 6th different race leader. And the number 6 car, of course, that had been leading, is now back at the back of the pack. Yeah, but it's still, of course, on the lead lap and very much in the fray, now in the fifth position.
Mazda 55, well down after its incident early on, but still got some pace, that car. It's dropped all the way down to 30. No, it hasn't. Talking nonsense there, Hindhoff. The 55 has dropped down to 16th. Yeah. Thank you, Jeremy. Why can I not see that? Ah, because I was looking for the wrong colour.
It's not where you'd expect it to be.
No.
It's just between the GTLMs and the GTDs.
Yes, and I was, for some reason, I was looking for a blue number, which is the LMP2s. Thank you, Jeremy. So Harry Tinknell back behind the wheel of that car. And that car, when it's been going very quickly indeed. Its best is a 109.8. Most of the top cars have been doing that sort of time. The best lap of the race, Dean Cameron with a 109.7. So there's definitely pace in the Mazdas. But that car with laps to make up, 19 laps away from the lead due to that lengthy stop. As Harry Tinknell had to get that car back in behind the wall and have the front discs replaced.
Well, yeah, that was that was the first stop, 7 minutes 22 seconds, but it had an even longer period of time behind the wall, then nearly half an hour much later on in the race where they did more work on the 55 car. So it's about 35 minutes adrift of everybody else, effectively.
Yeah. And the number seven car lead in the race, Ricky Taylor, you talked about him taking off like a scalded cat. He's just set his best lap of the race, 109.919. And we've got, I think, all of the cars in DPI all of the cars in DPI except for the number five has set laps between 109.7 and 109.9, which is pretty remarkable, isn't it?
It is. It is, Jeremy, but it's kind of what we expect now.
Yes, it
isn't
is, John.
Because yes. That's how competitive it is. You know, for a while now, for several years now, you and I have been talking about how you cannot afford, even if you want a decent finish in any of the classes in IMSA, you can't afford to be off the pace, you can't afford to make mistakes. And the reason why that we always say that, Jeremy, is because you can't make up time because everybody else is just as fast as you are.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, that's just fantastic. And, you know, we've had this sort of discussion before, haven't we, about full course cautions or code 60s or whatever. Yeah. You know, I just love the full course cautions, the way they're running IMSA, because it makes it exciting again. Yes, it can sometimes, you know, yellows breed yellows. Often there's another caution period shortly thereafter. It's great racing. It allows us to take a bit of a breather and then get back to proper racing again with everybody right in contention, as we see the number 55 car trying to get one of its laps back, at least from the one of the prototype cars. Brilliant stuff. It's just great, loving it.
Gareth has tweeted into us and said, do you think that the full course, unwarranted full course yellows, presumably designed to spice up the action, devalue Petit Le Mans as a serious race rather than just a spectacle?
Well, that was many years ago.
Well,
many years ago.
I don't see which of the three that we've had today have been unwarranted.
Generally.
Yeah.
But that was many years ago. That was a different era of sports car racing. We don't have those gratuitous yellows anymore, I think...
Quite the reverse. I would say, and I'm not having a go at you here, Gareth, and it's a perfectly sensible question to throw in.
Yes.
But quite the reverse now. The race control that we've seen from IMSA have been very good at letting incidents develop to see if cars can recover to the track themselves. Obviously, if it's a safety incident at a fast part of the circuit, Gabriel Aubrey off at turn one, you don't know whether that car's going to be able to recover. It's a super quick entry. I think you've got to throw the yellows and neutralize the race. Then we had the incident in the S's. Same thing. The car did manage to get back to the track, but do you know whether that's going to happen or not? And then two separate incidents involving four vehicles coming out the pits where you're over the top of a blind brow and you've got people there. I'm not sure what else you can do, because you can't deal with those incidents with local yellows here, because nobody's going out onto the track. It's very different. I've been quite critical of Michael Massey in Formula One for his inconsistencies between using virtual safety cars and full safety cars in Formula One this year. And the only thing worse than how that's happened is how they've tried to explain it, which it just doesn't stand up to any scrutiny whatsoever. I would say that here in IMSA, that allowing the racing to continue, so long as it's safe to do so, Jeremy, is absolutely the mantra from race control.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that it's a legitimate comment several years ago, and you know, in general, yes, but not the case nowadays. And you know, I think the race control really does a great job. You're absolutely right, John. They throw out the yellow as a kind of a last resort. It's only when there's real safety issues out there that they throw the yellow. They try, if they possibly can, they'll try to stay green, and you know, just to spice things up. No, that doesn't happen anymore. It used to, I think. Fair comment, but I don't think it does anymore.
And there are still forms of racing where a well-placed TV caution can be thrown out. British touring cars still do that, for sure. Some stock car racing still do that as well. Shears pointed out that the second caution, race control did take advantage of the yellow to clean the track, but that wasn't why they had the sweepers out immediately. It went yellow, but that wasn't why the yellow was thrown. There was, you know, a car in strife on the off the circuit, actually. But and, you know, listen, all good points. Keep them coming, yep, in IMSA, and you know,
absolutely.
No, don't mind that at all. So keep that coming into IMSA, at IMSA Radio. Ollie Jarvis back into the pits in the 77. And that can't...
That's behind the wall.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, of course. That was the car that's gone behind the wall. I thought that car had been back out again, but that's because I hadn't scrolled far enough across on my little screen with all the pretty coloured bars on it. Make a nice wallpaper, that, actually, now that I look at it like that. Maybe tile the bathroom in those colours. Ooh, there's an idea.
You'd have to keep finding wall space, though, because it continues to extend, doesn't it, the further in the race we go. So
I wonder if you could do it, though, and map out one of your favourite races.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah,
like that?
I do like
in
that.
Different coloured tiles.
Yes.
Yeah.
With zero repetition.
So, still trying to unravel what happened with the 77. No doubt that Jarvis in the 77 Mazda coming out of the pits there was contact with the number 63, the Balzan, Alessandro Balzan driven 63. Difficult, to be honest, to apportion any kind of blame to that. One coming out the pits, one coming through turn one. I haven't seen definitive evidence either way at that, perhaps then inconclusive. But what we can't tell you at all, I was going to say with any degree of finality, but we can't tell you at all what happened with Dane Cameron and Jop van Oytet, who we are pretty certain came together further up the track, but what it would appear, Johnny, to have been an unconnected incident.
Unconnected from the 77 and the 63, yeah, totally. What we don't know is if there was any contact, but it's very strange for Dane Cameron to be off the road and another car at a driver's right. Again, in an unrelated scenario. So, bizarre. And obviously, you know, we were fully focused on the 77 because it was going so strongly to that point. Had led the race, of course. And then all of a sudden, how quickly the fortunes for that crew could change. But yes, an LMP2 car off on the grass on one side. Cameron trying to pick up the speed at turn two and three as well. And that six car is still finding good speed. It's in fifth position. Obviously had to pit during the caution. I'm really pleased to see that Balsan, despite the contact with Jarvis, as Jarvis came out of the pits, that 63 Ferrari is still going very nicely, just 4.6 seconds off the GTD lead.
And by the way, Paul Marquardt, if you're wondering what I'm talking about the tiling, if you go to our enhanced timing screen, HTTPS, obviously, but timing.radioshow.limited, and look at one of the analysis screens, you'll see the bars stretching across in different colours for the different categories. And it wouldn't be beyond the wit of man to use glass tiles of the right length to make those and cut them up and make those following your race for the whichever race you wanted to do. I kind of like that as a splashback.
I'm just working out where the dado rail would go.
Oh, stop that.
Beneath all the tiles, perhaps.
People don't even know what a dado rail is nowadays, Johnny.
Nope.
Yeah. See, told you. our nearest to a millennial is like, what? What?
Hey, I am a millennial, thank you very much.
Hasn't she just brought a new album out, that dado?
Very good.
White flag.
Very good. Not yet. We've still got 4 hours and 33 minutes for that year. Change of lead in LMP2, by the way. Jeremy's been keeping an eye on the race while we went off on a tangent, but it is 10 hours, so we're allowed. Scott Huffaker back to the front of the field ahead of the Tower Motorsports by Starworks car. So it is now PR1 Matheson Motorsport, the 52, back to the head of the field. And he's rather cleared off, has Scott Huffaker. But that's all right. John Ferrano, he's doing what he's been told to do. Keep out of trouble. Get your time in behind the wheel of the car. There's still a race in LMP2. Absolutely, there's still a race in LMP2 with 4.5 hours to go.
Yeah, very much so. They're 3 laps ahead of number 51 car. Scott Huffaker's last lap, by the way, was a 1 minute 11.377. The overall race leader, Ricky Taylor, was a 1:11.446.
Wow.
So that lap by Huffaker was within about 0.3 seconds off that car's fastest lap of the race. That says a lot, I think, for this young man. He's just 20 years of age from Menlo Park in California, and he certainly isn't a name with which many people will be familiar. And by the way, no, he's not related to Joe Huffaker of Mini and other fame, fellow Californian from some years ago. But he's a young man with a big future ahead of himself and doing a nice job at the wheel of that leading car for PR1 Matheson Motorsports at the moment.
Still this intriguing scrap going on, which is only for pride at the moment, as the number 55 of Harry Tinknell, who, by the way, is now right in terms of timing and scoring, right with his teammate Ollie Jarvis, and the 77 has just come back out the pits again. So after that incident, Jarvis back out running in 15th position, and Harry Tinknell will come around this time and overtake him when he comes through. So good work again by the Multimatic Mazda team to get the 77 back out. But Harry Tinknell is sitting in behind the third place car of Pete Durrani, and he's not giving him any kind of rest at all, Jeremy Shaw, despite the fact he's nearly 20 laps down.
That's right. He hasn't given up yet. He's gonna push as hard as he possibly can. But it's certainly been a big shame, hasn't it? We saw how strong the Mazdas were at the 6 hours, how strong they were here last year as well. So this will be very, very disappointing for that team to have both cars hit problems. And now, yeah, I think unless something very bizarre happens, no chance of winning this race.
That was a 31 minute and 25 second stop then to get the 77 Mazda fixed. And it rejoins the race, as John says, pretty much right in front of the 55 sister car. Now, 55's just got track position, actually, but they're both scored as being 19 laps off the race leader, Ricky Taylor, now, and just 31 seconds apart from one another. So just over half an hour for Jarvis to be sitting in the pit lane, or behind the wall, more accurately. But both Mazdas back out again. Pride dented, no doubt, but speed very much there, and it's a question of what might have been for the two different, very different paint schemes for those cars run out of the same stable.
Stephen Gardner, hello, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, of course, and for the moment he's got the Championship Series baseball playing alongside Petit Le Mans until Bathurst starts later on, and then it'll be side-by-side racing action. Braves are in action tonight, aren't they, at the Dodgers, as the Championship Series continues for the right to play in the World Series. haven't been keeping up with what's been going on there. Has that actually started? Yeah, it will have, won't it? I'll get that up on another screen.
It's interesting how the prototypes are all spread out at the front of the field, John, isn't it? We've got Ricky Taylor now. He's pulled out, well, 5 or 6 seconds over the second place car of Ryan Briscoe. Pippo Durrani a similar distance back in third place. Tristan Vautier a little bit further back in fourth, and still holding on ahead of Dane Cameron, who's just unable to find a way past that number five Cadillac. Unlike that, the battle for GTD, which is, you know, intense as ever. Number 48 car actually has pulled out a bit of a lead. Brian Sellers has pulled out nearly 5 seconds now over Alessandro Balzan. Frankie Montecalvo, a similar distance back in third, but he's got pretty much the rest of the field directly behind that yellow and black Lexus.
Yeah, it's the NLCS tonight. Braves at the Dodgers leading the series at the moment. 3-2, but they're down 3-0 in the bottom of the fourth at the moment. I'm sure there'll be a few of you listening on 98.1 at the track who will be following Atlanta's progress in the NLCS. And that is Dame Cameron, and that is, doesn't seem right, but time is a way of bending, but that doesn't seem right at all, Jeremy.
No, not at all.
No, that's 20 laps. So at least I would say 10 laps short there, Jeremy, wouldn't you, for that one?
I think it could be they're just trying to get some track position. I think he probably feels that he's much quicker than Tristan Vautier. What's the point in sticking behind him? So come in, take on fuel, try and get at least not stuck behind that car. He's going to have lots of other traffic, of course, but at least not another prototype, because then you have the seven other prototype cars out on the racetrack. Try and make up ground with cleaner air, so that when number five comes in for its own stop, the number six will already be ahead of it. Okay. Because they were certainly losing ground to the 31.
The six is rejoined, and either right in front of or right behind the sister car, I think in front. So that's going to, they're going to allow Ricky Taylor to lap the six. Yes, confirmed. So the seven car stays in the race lead, and the two Acuras now are circulating absolutely together, with Dane Cameron rejoining the race, initially in front of and now behind his teammate at Team Penske. Just over 8 seconds the advantage for Taylor over Ryan Briscoe's Wayne Taylor Racing Cadillac number 10. 5.5 seconds back is Pippo Durrani in the Whelan Engineering caddy, and then you've got Tristan Vautier, who was posing potentially Dane Cameron a bit of an issue. Let's see whether he can leapfrog that car now whilst occupying a very different part of the racetrack.
That's a good point, because Ricky Taylor is ahead of Dane Cameron, isn't he?
So Cameron is now
a lap down, yes.
Yes. Yeah, he merged right in front of Ricky, and they switched places into 10A. GT Daytona cars really stacking up, and the FAF car going side by side with the Aston Martin number 23. And that Aston is being driven by Darren Turner at the moment.
Dazzle.
So he's just been overtaken by Zach Robichon in the FAF Motorsport plaid car. And meanwhile, a little further up the road is Jan Halen in the Wright Motorsports Porsche. So that is 5th, 6th and 7th in GT Daytona. They're really not very far away from Frankie Montecalvo either, in the Aim Vassar-Sullivan Lexus. And then Shinji Mishimi in the Meyer Shank Racing Acura running in 3rd. But still Brian Sellers leading that GT Daytona class by almost 5 seconds. The 48 car was put on a very different pit stop strategy in the early stages. I know that they then took a stop to kind of line themselves up with everybody else in the class, but they've been on slightly different amounts of fuel, therefore, since then, because of Madison Snow's 5-lapper leading into the very first caution of the race. Since then, the class leader has been doing fairly consistently 41, 42, 43 in some cases lap stints. Brian Sellers halfway through his current one.
Sure, Adam has some news from Multimatic about the amount of work that had to be undertaken on that number 77 car. Ollie Jarvis now back in the race and some 35 seconds behind Harry Tinknell. They're 6th and 7th in class, but 15th and 16th on the timing and scoring monitor.
They had to change, and I quote, pretty much everything on the right rear of the car, as well as the front splitter and the nose. So it was substantial work that was very quickly done by the Mazda mechanics. So a big round of applause to them. The other car that I've just been investigating is the 57 Heinricher Racing Acura. Trent Hinman got a great restart. He was up there battling for the top four positions. A little bit of contact with Jan Halen and the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche opened the door for both the Pfaff Porsche with Zach Robichon and the 23 Aston Martin of Darren Turner to come through. So now Trent is back in eighth, but he does have a fast car looking to move back up.
That was a VP Racing Fuel paddock and pit report, and both of those because there was work going on in both of those areas. Shea Adam, thank you very much indeed. The Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre has Jeremy Shaw, Johnny Palmer and me, John Hindorf, and you're listening around the world. It's on RS2 IMSA Radio, a few other syndications as well, with Sirius 217 and XM202 jumping on board again this weekend as we borrow their airwaves, as we do for every WeatherTech, IMSA WeatherTech sports car race. So a couple of weeks' time at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca and for the whole of the 12 hours at Sebring. And of course 98.1 Road Atlanta FM at the track. Overtake last time around, Jeremy, in GT Daytona.
Yeah, Shea was just talking about the fact that the number 57 car fell back after that incident with the Jan Halen number 16 car. Last time around, Trent Hinman did make up one of those positions he'd lost. He did get past Jack Hawksworth in the number 14 Lexus. So back up now into the eighth position in the class, and it's really tight out there. It's interesting to me that Brian Stella is just inching away, just a couple of tenths or so a lap from Balzan in second place, and Shinny Michimi is about 5 seconds back in third position. Finally, I think he's just got a little bit of a breathing ground over Jan Halen just over the last couple of laps, but it's very, very closely matched in that mid-pack in GTD.
Thank you, Jeremy. That's Jeremy Shaw. Well, this one's bubbling up nicely, which is what we like to see. And under green conditions now for just over 25 minutes. Three interventions from the safety car. Gabriel Aubrey in the wall early at turn one. That car, very heavy hit and ended up actually behind the tyre walls. And we've had a couple of other interventions since then. Another pass as well, Jan Halen up the pace now in the Porsche, and it's just gone past Frankie Monte Calvo. So GTD providing us the sort of Saturday night street fight from the street cars. Always seems to be a battle going on somewhere, and that's not over either in GTD, as the number 9 Pfaff car, Zachary Robichon's just gone past Frank Monte Calvo as well. So two Porsches getting past Frank Monte Calvo in the last lap or so, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, they're shuffling positions fairly regularly amongst themselves. I'm sure it's as a result of the fact that their own race is being kind of compromised by prototypes coming through. But yeah, that's what this sort of multi-class racing is all about. What makes it so exciting.
So Johnny still doing a bit of digging on the incident that caused the last full course yellow, and hard to say, Johnny, whether the two prototypes getting together was a result of the Ferrari and the Mazda getting together, but some fairly hefty contact, it would seem, between those two prototypes, Cameron and Jop van Uytert.
That is the one, the one thing that I can confirm. Now, what I don't know is what Jop van Uytert actually made contact with, whether it was the side of Cameron's car or indeed the concrete wall in the early part of the lap, but Jop reporting back to say it was a very hard hit indeed for the number 8 car at the time. So no question it was that car on the grass on one side of the track with Dane Cameron on the other. But whether the two prototypes, the 6 and the 8, had actually made contact to cause that. And the other thing we're trying to work out is, did those cars go off in avoidance of the Mazda 77 and yes. the 63 Ferrari? I think that actually the two prototypes getting together was further up the road from the 77 then coming out of the pit lane. So I still think they were unrelated. Very difficult to piece together from the, you know, what we've witnessed reliving that that event. And I'm sure many people actually down on the corner spectating will have all the answers. Jot van Outer, though, knows that he was involved in something that involved a pretty hard hit with some circuit scenery and quite possibly with Dane Cameron too.
Shit.
We've got Pippo Durrani into the pit lane as he did fuel and tires but stayed aboard the 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac. Also into the pit lane is John Ferrano in the number 8 Tower Motorsport LMP2 car. That's his drive time met as 2.5 hours have elapsed for him behind the wheel. So it should be Jupp and brain fade there. Should be Jupp taking over for the next stint. So we won't be able to get a conversation with him. Oh no, Ferrano's staying behind the wheel. Wow, John's doing a lot of driving. Having met the 2.5 hours, Scott Huffaker is still out in front. And also, oh, it was Tristan Bodier into the pit lane for the number 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac as in comes Ricky Taylor and Elio Castroneves taking over the number 7 Acura Team Penske. Once again, fuel and tires there.
It is 8 hours for the next Michelin Endurance Cup point share, isn't it?
Correct.
Okay, that's fine. So that's still a wee while away at the moment. The wheel guns in the background from Shea is the Castroneves car. That looked fairly standard and secure for the Rossi Taylor Castroneves trio.
The captain would be proud of that stop. Elio revs the engine back into life. Fuel probe comes out and he leaves the pit lane. We should be seeing the other DPIs coming down the pit lane. The next one should be the Konica Minolta Cadillac. It's been out there for 48 minutes since its last pit stop. Ryan Briscoe will be staying aboard.
Yeah, coming to finish its 33rd lap, and that's about it. Now, we have had some yellow in that. Half a dozen? 7 laps, actually, at the start. So he may be able to squeeze a couple of extra laps out of that car, but yes, and what we're seeing again is what we were seeing earlier on, Jeremy, that Konica Minolta Cadillac, when everybody else pits, it cycles to the front of the field, and it keeps doing that. So they're very much still in this battle. This is the car, remember, that leads the overall championship.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, not so long ago before the caution, it was almost in danger of going a lap down. Mm. Well, you know, and we always see, do we not, this number 10 car, when I think in the overnight hours, it always seems to run particularly well. Long distance races in general, when we get towards the end of them, the number 10 car is generally right there. This is the car, of course, that won at Daytona earlier this season. And, I think this is looking really good for this team for later in this race to be running so strongly now at this stage, and once again stretching his fuel quite nicely on this stint. It can stay out for at least one more lap,
maybe more than that, because actually this stint involves 7 maybe 8 laps of caution. So we could be back to see the longest stint of the race, courtesy of the slowed pace at the start of it for Ryan Briscoe.
And in fact, just come in, Shea. Adam, you've got him in the pit lane. Just making
it's almost as...
See, he's just making a liar out of you, JP.
Yeah, well, that's
it's almost as if he can hear us, John, and he hears us calling him into the pit lane instead of the guys on the pit wall telling him to stay out, which is very nice of Ryan Briscoe. He is quite good at obeying when Wayne Taylor gets on the radio and says, hey, do this. This is how we win. It seems to work for the number 10 as fuel and tires going on there. And yep, staying aboard for Briscoe. The door is open. So I wonder if they're doing a data stick change as it is between the next window of opportunity for that. Tires coming off, tires going on. Ooh, they look nice and shiny. So those are new Michelins for Ryan Briscoe. He'll be happy with that. As just looking, I saw someone else coming into the pit lane out of the corner of my eye. Oh, it's the 55 Mazda, Harry Tinknell, back into the pit lane once again, but a very clean stop by the number 10. Excellent work by those boys and girls again.
Shea Adam watching over the pit and paddock for us. So the rhythm of the race, although slightly broken up by the safety car, what, half an hour ago, a little less than that since we went back to green flag. What it has done is pulled some of the leaders and their pit stop schedules a little closer together, with the notable exception of the number six Acura, which did that odd 20 lap stint to put it off kilter. That means Dane Cameron's been in the car for 11 laps, whilst all of the cars around him have been insignificant. Their drivers have been insignificantly less, Johnny.
Yeah, but I mean, what they were trying to do is get ahead of Vautier, weren't they? And that seems to have been done. So Dane Cameron into some cleaner air, and they've actually vaulted Tristan Vautier, courtesy of those stops. With Castroneves now to the race lead in the number seven car, back to the race lead. Pipo Dirani, 2.4 seconds adrift in second in the Weyland Engineering Cadillac. Dane Cameron actually back up to third place now because of that pit stop for Ryan Briscoe. It's taken him a lap or so to get the brand new Michelins, the shiny ones, as Shay established, to race operating temperature again. He's just about there now, I'd say. So expecting some very good times now to come in from Briscoe.
Quick note coming into me here. I want to say hello to somebody who is enjoying their retirement. It pains me to say Chris Baker, formerly of Michelin, who's now retired. Chris is at the track on the rooftop overlooking Turn 12 on the Michelin Tower. And awaiting the sunset, I hear. That's the report I'm getting. Chris, nice to hear you're doing well. You are much missed, sir. And your encyclopedic knowledge of tyre fitment. We once joked, it was only partially joking, about doing a Beat Baker feature on IMSA Radio, where you could let Chris know what your car was, and he would know what size tyres and wheels it would have had on from standard. And he's absolutely extraordinary. As soon as I told him about my 968, oh, yeah, yeah, that needs such and such and such and such. Right, okay, fine. Thanks very much. Just extraordinary. Chris, good to know that you're still enjoying the motor racing. Hope the retirement is going all right. As my late father used to say, careful what you wish for retirement. It was the toughest job, he said, he ever had, because you never get any days off from it. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch, still over 4 hours to go. Race control looking at the 912 and the 3. Now, that was that incident a little while ago. Shit.
I didn't see it, but there has been a penalty given and it's being served right now. Matthew Jaminet coming down the pit lane for incident responsibility with the 3. It is a drive through.
Oh, right. Okay. So already that has been served. So that was just like 5 minutes ago. It was turn 9 where it happened. Turn 9, that is the back straight. So
yes, it is.
That's the kink coming down the hill just before or at the brow of the hill. So that's Porsche and Corvette involved in that. Drive-through served by Matthew Jaminet. And the high revving engine in the background is the flat six from the Porsche. Johnny Palmer has some driver news for us.
Only in the sense that the 8 car right now, I'm hearing, has the driver ID set to the wrong position. So rather than it being John Ferrano at the wheel, it's actually Mikkel Jensen for Tower Motorsport by Starworks. So Jensen just pounding out some very good lap times indeed. 1:12.2 just produced by the Dane. And ultimately trying to reel in the PR1 Matheson Motorsport Orica. But there's a lap between them. At least it's displayed as a lap currently. Yes, that probably is correct, actually. And 8 laps down on the overall race leader. But 4.5 seconds is the gap. Elio Castroneves back to Pipo Dirani. Acura from Cadillac, from the second Acura of Dane Cameron. And that early pit stop seems to be working nicely now, because steadily it's giving the six car a bit of a lift. Back up to third position it goes. Driver change at five, as we've mentioned. Sebastian Bourdais taking over from the Mustang sampling car. And that machine had been driven by Tristan Vautier.
Yeah, number six car, vaulted. Number 10 car, I don't know whether that had a slow pit stop or whether it's just had some traffic on the in or out lap, I don't know, but all of a sudden the number 10 car is behind, is fallen from second place to fourth during that round of pit stops. It's been vaulted by both the number 31 and the number six car as well. So maybe that's something we can have a find out about.
Pit stop for 10 looks all right, actually. Go on, sorry, Jeremy.
Jan Halen's up into third place in GTD in the Wright Motorsports Caliber 60. And that was it, John. Thank you.
A minute and 6 seconds for the 10. And the previous stop was a minute and 7. So nothing wrong with the... Where are we? 2, 4, 6, 8. Ninth pit stop for that particular car. It didn't seem to pick up the speed quite as much as I'd expected. Then again, I was taking into account, you know, the first lap to a lap and a half on very cold tyres, brand new tyres as well. So whether there was just the initial phase of having to scrub the releasing agent on the Michelin tyres too. But by the sounds of things, it's losting more time than that. 2.4 seconds adrift of Cameron, who's managed to leapfrog not only the 5, but the 10 as well.
Yeah, number 5 car, Sebastian Bourdais, took over Tristan Vautier at last stop. He's dropping a lot of time. He's now more than 19 seconds behind the number 10 car. So before the round of pit stops, he was maybe 15 seconds behind it. You're right, it was the number 6 car just making, a short fuel. I would expect to see that car in. Because it didn't need much fuel when it made its last pit stop at lap 50, so it was a short fuel stop. We'll see now how long he goes before he comes in for his next round of pit stops, which, if it's 30 laps, and that was just a short fill that time, and it'll be a full fill on the next stop for the number 6 car. But it's mission accomplished there. They got that car back in clean air, quote-unquote, up into third position, and he's charging hard.
Yeah, very good average lap time for Dane Cameron currently, as... This is another double, I'm going to say, for Dane. Well, when you actually add together the shortish stint, one before last, it's, let's say, a quadruple stint for Cameron. 30 laps. He then did a short one of just 5, the 20-lap stint to get him out of the traffic. And he's now getting close to another 20-lap stint, which will be extended to into the early 30s. But the average laps time... A 111.8, that's really impressive from Cameron.
Jeremy, Jan Halen getting on with business again in GT Daytona. What a star he is.
Yeah, really amazing, isn't it? He charged that car up from the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th position at the restart, now up into 3rd, and just set the fastest lap of the race in GT Daytona. 1 minute 20.278, fractionally quicker than a 20.298 set by Alessandro Balzan a while ago. So, and Jan Halen is about 7.5 seconds behind Balzan, and that gap has already come down by a couple of seconds inside the last four or five laps.
9-1-2, trying to make the time back up again from Chaminet. Gets a bit of a clean run into, well, I was about to say clean run into turn two, and then up popped a LMP2 car and just dives through. Sun beginning to drop below the tree line now, and that tricky period before the sun goes right down, almost over. Still a little bit difficult as you turn through turn 6, right-handed, which is exactly where Chaminet is now. Got the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche with Jan Halen in ahead of him. And yeah, the trees are now masking the sunshine, and you can quite easily now begin to see the headlights from the cars shining on the back of the other cars. So what are we now? Still about, what, from official sunset, Johnny. Still some time from official sunset, which is just before 7, isn't it?
Yeah, 25 minutes or so.
Right.
So we're getting pretty close now, and official sunset will still have quite a bit of light in the sky, but that's the point of darkness kicking in, and this race set to run until 10:40 local time, so well over 3.5 hours of darkness. Very kind of atmospheric light in the sky though now, turning slightly golden. And I think this next half an hour or so for the drivers in for the current stint could be very unpredictable in terms of just, you know, if you're in traffic and you've got distractions all around you anyway, the last thing you want is the sun glaring right into the cockpit. And yes, the visors on helmets are designed to try and limit that as much as possible. You've also got the visor at the top of the windshield too. Some will get so low that really that visor's a little bit useless on the car. So a question of how much of experience you've had around this place previously, and muscle memory a lot of the time as well.
Absolutely,
relying
right.
purely on where the track went a lap ago and hoping it's vaguely in the same place.
It's amazing when you feel comfortable with a track, Jeremy. You've done enough driving, not as much as some of these guys who I would suggest could almost drive this place with their eyes closed. I'm not suggesting they would do that, by the way. But it's amazing when you feel comfortable with a track, just how easy it is to get back into the groove, as the drivers would say, get back into the rhythm and feel the track under your wheels, as it were. You know, people often, you often hear, let the track come to you, don't try and force it. Well, that only happens when you're comfortable with a circuit, doesn't it, and with your car.
Well, it does, and some people are more comfortable at night time than others. I mean, all the professionals are pretty comfortable in night time, but some certainly more so than others. And it's certainly interesting to see that number 10 car we talked about a little while ago, it's showing really, really good pace at the moment. Ron Briscoe is actually closing in a little bit on Dane Cameron ahead of him. The number 10 car looking really, really strong at this stage in the game. Back in GTD, there was a pit stop for number 48 car again a little while ago. That's running on a different strategy to everybody else. So that's fallen from first in the class down to, as one would expect, 12th. Yes, 12th. I think it's just a regular pit stop for that car. That's how close everybody is in GTD. And Alessandro Balzan, therefore, now leads from Jan Halen, who, having set the fastest lap of the race, has got that gap down to 6.2 seconds to Alessandro Balzan. Zachary Robichaud in the Pfaff Porsche, just about 4 seconds further back in the third position. Then a little bit of a gap back to Shinya Michimi, and then a big gaggle of cars led by Frankie Montecalvo in the Lexus with Darren Turner, Trent Hinman, Jack Hawksworth, Nandy Lally, absolutely nose to tail.
Well, coming down to another hour of racing having been completed, let's rattle through those class leaders and what's going on in GTD. As you've heard, Jan Halen fighting his way up to second behind Alessandro Balzan. So it's Ferrari 63 by 4.5 seconds from Wright Motorsport Porsche number 16, from Pfaff Motorsport Porsche and Zachary Robichaud number 9. It's another 5.5, 6 seconds further back. Then Michimi, that distinctive 86 Meyerschenk Racing purple and black Acura. 8 seconds further back, Frank Montecalvo for Ian Vassar-Sullivan in the Lexus RCF GT3. That's the number 12 version of that car. And Darren Turner into the top six for the Heart of Racing team. I hear a cheer from up in crew, the home of Bentley, but Sarah and Martin tuned in, watching and listening. 23 car then in sixth position, just around about 7/10 of a second behind the car ahead. 4/10 behind the Frankie Montecalvo car. So that's nice and close there. In GT Le Mans, John Edwards for BMW team RLL leads it by about 3.5 seconds from Nicky Katzberg, 24 from 3, then the 911. So BMW, Corvette and Porsche are all within about 10 seconds of each other. 4 seconds further back, Marcel Fesler, who's been in that Corvette for quite a long time, it seems to me. Should be getting out, I think, at the next pit stop in that number 4. Then Matthew Chaminet, another 17 seconds further back for the 912. The throttle body problem costing a huge amount of time for Conor De Filippi and the number 25 BMW M8 GT3, and there are 30 laps near enough off the lead lap in GT Le Mans. LMP2, Scott Huffaker has also been in that PR1 Matheson Motorsport LMP2 leading car for a while, just under a minute ahead of Mikkel Jensen for Tower Motorsport by Starworks. Then laps back, four laps back to Colin Brown for Performance Tech in the 38, and Rob Hordes actually only a couple of seconds further back in the Inter-Europol car in fourth position in the number 51. And I think, yes, Jeremy's just typed that on my screen, that those two have just changed places whilst I was doing that update. And at the top of the field, we have five DPIs now. Castro Neves for Acura Team Penske by just under 2 seconds from the charging. When is he ever not charging? Pipo Durrani in the 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac. Then the second of the Acuras. Amazing that Dave Cameron is back up into third position after being off the road at that heavy contact with Jop van Oertet. Then Ryan Briscoe's another 2 seconds further back in fourth position in the black number 10. Remember that car leading the overall championship. 28 seconds further back, the Mustang sampling number 5 car with Sebastian Bourdais behind the wheel. That's how it stands. 275 laps completed, and still we have just under 4 laps to go, with 456 laps predicted at the end of the 10 hours. This is IMSA Radio and IMSA TV.